Hello, everyone. This is Manoj Bhupathi. Welcome to Oncology Decoded. I'm here with Ben in his hometown in Nashville, Tennessee. We are excited to present you from World GU.
Yes, we're excited to have World GU in our own backyard. Exciting conference. We have many academics and community experts coming into Tennessee to talk about what they think is the most exciting data and information that needs to be shared with the community. We're fortunate enough to be podcasting live from World GU, walking around, talking to our friends and colleagues about what they want to tell us. And hopefully, you'll be seeing some interesting nuggets of information pop onto your podcast feed as we trial our sound bites. Live from World GU.
So we're going to be talking about kidney, bladder, and prostate cancer. Correct, Ben?
Maybe even testicular. Who knows?
What are you excited about in this conference?
You know, I took a look at the agenda, and we're going to cover a lot of things. I think we're going to have some interesting talk about radioligand therapy. But what gets me really excited is how do we bring the disciplines together, surgery, medical oncology, radiation. There's a couple sessions today that are bringing all three groups in to discuss different points of view. And personally, I think that's what is important about these conferences, where we can cross the aisle, essentially, talk with these colleagues and make sure that we're sharing information and on the same page.
Totally agree with you. I think the multidisciplinary aspect is very important for our cancer patients. I agree that trying to understand the impact of what they tell us and incorporating into our clinic is going to be quite valuable. So look forward to it. We will keep you posted on where we're going and follow us along.
Hello, I'm here with Mehmet Asim Balan from Winship Cancer Institute at Emory University. He's the director of GU over there. Please tell us, what are you talking about today?
Oh, thank you so much, Ben. Yeah, first of all, it's my pleasure to be at World GU. Like, it's a beautiful city, Nashville, Tennessee. Actually, this is my first year attending World GU, and I'm super excited. And this year, I'm going to be the session chair for session four, case-based real-world management of therapeutic intervention in GU cancer. And we're going to highlight maximizing multidisciplinary care. As you know, this is very important in our field, like not everything on our guidelines. Because of this reason, we always use multi-D discussion for difficult cases or challenging cases. And we're going to have like four fantastic speakers in our session. Like we're going to talk about kidney cancer, bladder cancer, prostate cancer. And we have a radiation oncologist in our session, medical oncologist. And then we're going to wrap up our session with Q&A and the panel discussion. I think this is very important. Hopefully, it's going to be a perfect discussion, and I'm looking forward.
So, Dr. Balan, can you tell us, from a community oncology standpoint, why do you think this is important?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, like we always follow our guidelines, but when we see our patients in real world, like some situation is not on the guideline, and I think we discuss as a team like to come up the best treatment plan. And this includes medical oncology, like surgery and radiation oncology. And at the end of the day, we really want to help our patient and try to make their treatment outcome as best as possible. I think because of that, it's going to be a very important session.
Yeah, I think that's key. I think, you know, unlike at Emory University in an academic hospital where all of these modalities are under the same roof, in the community, care can be fractured. So communication is essential. And that's what's great about World GU. We're bringing interdisciplinary specialists together to chat, learn from each other, collaborate, communicate, and then we can take that back and hopefully relay that into our practice and learn more from that. So I think that's great. We're excited for the session. Have you ever been to Nashville before?
I've been a couple times, but never been in a music hall. Like, it's perfect. Like, it's going to be a nice, academic and educational experience, but at the same time, we're going to have some fun to just enjoy some real music.
We're going to take them to the Honky Tonks on Broadway. We're looking forward to it. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Hello. We are here with Sid Sadler, who is a patient advocate at World GU in Nashville. We're curious to get your patient perspective, Sid. Can you tell us what your takeaways from the World GU conference here in Nashville and what your thoughts are?
Yeah, so I think coming to something like this is kind of multifaceted, if you will. I think sharing my perspective with doctors is important. It's vital. I think a lot of times the patient interaction is sometimes transactional. And I think especially with the younger doctors, the fellows, researchers, getting that patient perspective and showing them kind of why they do what they do is really vital. And I think also from my point of view, being a patient, it's rewarding in a sense that I feel like I'm giving back to patients that have done this before me. And I'm also also giving back to the researchers and scientists and doctors that are currently treating patients.
No, I think that's really impactful because, you know, sometimes we get so siloed within our academic world, in our community oncology world, where, you know, we're just treating the disease. And it's always great when people like you come and re-remind us how important it is that every single case and every single challenge goes back to a patient, a person, and their family. So thank you for coming today. Thank you for sharing your story on stage live at World GU here in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm going to close with one question, because you're from Nashville. Mm-hmm. What's the best food in Nashville, Tennessee?
There is a ton that I could answer there. I think if you've never been to Nashville, I would say any type of hot chicken place. That's what Nashville is known for. So I would say do that because that's a touristy thing to do and to definitely go get some hot chicken. Another great place that you could probably go, and I would probably get some slack for saying this, but it's called Arnold's Kitchen. It's kind of a hole in the wall type of place, but it's like your southern home cooking, like stick to your ribs type of thing.
So I keep hearing about this hot chicken, but being a vegetarian, I have no options here.
Yeah.
What else would you recommend?
Well, Arnold's Kitchen, you can get like sides. You can get side dishes and stuff, so you don't have to go meat. Now, I will say there are places, and I'm not familiar, so you'd have to look it up. But there are places that are doing vegetarian hot chicken as well. So you can do some imitation meat, something like that, or something that's still fried. It's still going to be spicy, so you can probably still get your fill in that way.
No, thank you. Thank you for that. You know, Nashville is the culinary epicenter of the world. You can find anything here, Manoj. And again, thank you, Sid, for sharing your story live on stage today. So impactful, so important, and a constant reminder of how important it is for us to communicate data and research to the person who's suffering from the disease, as well as the people with the disease, to share with us how we can do better, how we can further our communication, and a constant reminder of why we need to continue doing what we're all doing, which is trying to push the field forward, and that's why we're here at World GU. So thank you, and look forward to the rest of the conference. I'm here with Dr. Carrie Schaeffert from Vanderbilt University Medical Center. She is a talented GU medical oncologist that I have the personal pleasure of working with here in Nashville, Tennessee. She was just on the stage at World GU 25 in Nashville, Tennessee. Please tell us, what were you talking about?
Thanks so much for interviewing me. So I was working and talking with Dr. Jason from Dana-Farber, and she spoke a bit about imaging criteria and use of imaging in radioligand therapy. And then I talked about upcoming therapies and ongoing trials in the radioligand space in prostate cancer.
So that's interesting. Please, what are you most excited about?
So I think we are definitely seeing with the landscape of prostate cancer, radioligands are being moved earlier, and they're also being used in combinations. So it's going to be very interesting to see how early they move. I think we have upcoming data probably going to be presented soon about PSMA addition. I would love to see if we do have a triplet therapy in the hormone-sensitive space. That would be amazing for patients. And then also there's even trials in the neoadjuvant space. So that'll be very interesting to see if we end up having a radioligand in the neoadjuvant setting for prostate cancer.
Can you just tell us a little bit about the difference between lutetium and actinium and where you think this is going to go?
Sure. So lutetium is a beta emitter and actinium is an alpha emitter. And so they do have slightly different side effect profiles and different penetration into the tissue. So I think eventually what we may see is that actinium has a space slightly different from beta emitters, and you'll be really treating patients based on their imaging, but also their burden of disease and also where in the disease course you're treating them.
So I kind of have an off-the-cuff question for you.
Sure.
So, you know, we are very much focused on community oncology, right? Because we have kind of different challenges, right? So from your perspective, as the community prepares or the community oncologist prepares for the upcoming targets in various radioligands, right? So the actiniums and such, what advice would you give us in order to say, this is what you should be expecting?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and we touched on it a little bit on stage. I think that the beauty of radiopharmaceuticals is it's really a multidisciplinary field, and so I like it for that reason, and so in the community, it's also going to be a multidisciplinary field. Getting to know your counterparts that are treating, having open lines of communication and frequent communication is really important, and also, we talked about this on stage, just standardizing your scan use. Whatever scan use you're using, make sure that you're noticing trends with patients and just making sure that when they're getting getting radioligands are getting benefit from that therapy.
Thank you a lot, Dr. Shaver. That was really helpful, very insightful, very interesting. A great session earlier today. And I'd like to personally thank you for helping take care of so many of my patients as well here in Nashville, Tennessee. So with that, enjoy the rest of the conference, and hopefully we can show our friends and colleagues a good time tonight on Broadway.
All right. Here we are with Dr. Mark Fleming from Virginia Oncology, Dr. Jeff Urio, and Dr. Mike Latanzi from Texas Oncology, our SCRI group from all different locations. So I just wanted to get all of your guys' thoughts from the morning sessions from World GU in Nashville. Dr. Fleming, why don't we start with you?
Well, I was part of the localized treatment options, and it was a great overview, especially from a medical oncologist perspective, of all the kind of new treatments that are going on in localized cancers. So very exciting for our patients. So opportunities for them to even be cured, so they don't necessarily need systemic therapy. So I was very pleased about that.
Dr. Urio?
Yeah, I'll echo that. I enjoyed just hearing some different perspectives on localized therapy, multidisciplinary care, particularly, you know, even hearing about non-invasive bladder cancer and some of our new options that are available for patients, which is pretty exciting.
Yeah, and I think for me, the main takeaways were really, you know, valued the multidisciplinary discussion. I think, you know, as Mark, you know, highlighted, that's something in community practice that's a little bit more logistically challenging for us, but just, you know, great to hear how, you know, our academic colleagues in urology or radiation or radiology are coordinating these multidisciplinary decisions, and also kind of looking forward to kind of novel radiotracers for RCC and perhaps other kind of novel imaging modalities coming down the pike for localized disease.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Latanzi, and I think, you know, credit to Dr. Fleming on stage. Discussing with all the academics is the nuances are different in patient care in the community versus in an academic setting. There are challenges about how we share patient care, how we communicate that patient care, and how we put the patient first, and that's always the goal. So I'm glad that, you know, ideology and World GU and this conference is a way to get academics and community GU specialists in a room together to have these thoughtful discussions both on stage as well as off stage. And I just want to throw a shout out. We have some great representation that, you know, community GU leadership and research leadership is here at this conference with the more traditional academic centers, really showing the power of what can be done in the community in GU medical oncology, representing some of the various leaders across the country in Sarah Cannon Research Institute's national research program.
So, Ben, while we're here, I do want to ask our colleagues, you know, what would their suggestions be for our partners out in the community on how to collaborate with urologists or radiation oncologists, even our other medical oncology colleagues, to share what we do on a day-to-day basis? Dr. Fleming?
Well, I think what we do, we're fortunate. We come from practices where we have the opportunity to subspecialize, and I do think that we can bring an expertise. I think colleagues, I think the important thing is staying up to date. Lots of resources out there to stay current, and your podcast is a great example of how to do that. I did want to touch on something Ben said with regarding multidisciplinary. I think that oftentimes we think of site neutrality in terms of neutral 340B pricing really impacts the plating field. But one of the things maybe we should be pushing for in the future is site neutrality regarding the ability to be able to do multidisciplinary clinics with multiple tax IDs, with community providers. The playing field is not level. So maybe one of our next advocacies is trying to expand that so we can really truly beyond tumor boards, which we all participate in, of doing kind of multidisciplinary involvement.
Thank you, Dr. Fleming. I completely echo what you're saying. Dr. Latanzi, Dr. Urio, any additional thoughts?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we do is, you know, because we are fortunate to work with urologists and radiation oncologists who specialize in prostate and other urologic cancers, we are able to have multidisciplinary clinics. And obviously, it's going to vary dependent upon, you know, the size and location of each clinic across the state. But we are, in some cases, able to offer multidisciplinary clinics, even though we're in a community setting. And the patients really find that valuable to get sort of three different, you know, areas of expertise on the management of any kind of localized or early stage urologic cancer.
Dr. Urio, any thoughts?
No, I'll echo that. I think in the community, a big thing is working, you know, as medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, working with our urology partners, and really being involved with these patients early is important. That's one thing I've found. How do we, you know, just be a team together, put the patients first, and, you know, get involved early on in diagnoses so that we can all work together. And so I think that's an important thing out in the community to really push for.
Yeah, basically cutting the institutional badge off your white coat and putting the patient first. So thank you with those final thoughts. Thank you for all here at World GU in Nashville, Tennessee, my hometown. So appreciate everyone coming and visiting me. I did not have to travel. And with all that, you know, good luck with the rest of the conference. Hi, I'm here at World GU 25 with Dr. Elizabeth Kelsler, a GU medical oncologist from the University of Colorado. And she was just presenting on stage a very interesting session about metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. What do you want to tell us about that?
I'd say a couple key takeaway points are that there are a number of choices in metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. And so as we think about using combinations of therapy, really grounding ourselves in the presentation of our patient, are they de novo metastatic disease or metachronous, as well as understanding that we are likely to see this creep of stage migration using PSMA PET scans. So considering that most of our data is in the use of conventional imaging, acknowledging the unknowns if we are treating patients based off of a PSMA PET scan alone.
And that's something that we always have the urge to do, and I completely say we're probably over-treating a lot of patients. And I think that was a great point you had on stage today. And then thinking about the new targets, what new targets in hormone-sensitive prostate cancer should a community oncologist be aware of? What's coming in the next year?
Well, I think that really seeing the combination of niraparib, abiraterone, and prednisone in combination with ADT backbone is something that we're all enthusiastic about. That was shared only in abstract form, so we're interested to see the full trial results come forth, but certainly see that progression-free survival benefit and the trend towards overall survival, and so likely thinking about your patients with homologous recombinant repair defects, is this a triplet that you may lean on if they're not a candidate for cytotoxic therapy or have other disease considerations?
Awesome. Thank you today, and enjoy Nashville. All right, now I'm with Benjamin Mon from the Huntsman Cancer Institute, a GU medical oncologist and a friend and a colleague. He was just chairing a session at World GU 25 talking about MRD in GU tumors. So we're going to talk with somebody else in a little bit about urothelial cancer. So why don't you give us some highlights from your session on, let's start with prostate cancer. Is there a role for MRD in prostate cancer?
First, I have to say, Ben, it's always great talking to you. It feels a little bit like talking to myself, saying Ben, in the echo chamber. But thanks for having me with this discussion. So in terms of prostate cancer, it's really tricky in terms of like MRD testing because we already actually have that test, the PSA. It's incredibly exquisitely sensitive. Like the way I describe it to patients is if you pay attention to the units, right, it's nanograms, right? It's a millionth of a gram in just a milliliter that we're detecting. So it's an incredibly exquisitely sensitive test. So it's hard to build on that. There can be more utility once we start looking at the data in the later lines of the disease, like castration-resistant prostate cancer. But in terms of like MRD testing, like patients that have a diagnosis of localized disease and we're trying to define a better test to parse out do they have metastatic disease or not, that's tricky and hard to build on. So there is some important work looking at that because PSA is not perfect, but compared to other cancers, it's important to remember we already have an MRD test in that space.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. I think PSA is a really, really good test and it's pretty darn sensitive. I will say, I think you're right. In some of those more resistant, more refractory, maybe neuroendocrine-like tumors, maybe there's a role there. We just have to stay tuned and find out. Okay, let's switch to kidney. So what about kidney? We heard some stuff about KIM-1. We've heard about, obviously, MRD with, you know, ctDNA. What do you think is the most promising?
KIM-1 seems to be the most promising, I would say. We have a lot of prospective data sets that KIM-1 has been retrospectively analyzed in, and very consistently across each of those prospective clinical trial data sets, again, to emphasize where it's been, KIM-1's been retrospectively analyzed, it's consistent results. So it seems very promising. The other huge advantage is that a lot of the MRD type testing technology that we've used in other cancers or even in kidney cancer is genomic based. And there's a huge sensitivity issue with those technologies in kidney cancer. Whereas the proteomic based test, KIM-1, seems to be quite sensitive. There's still some work we need to do in terms of like establishing cutoffs, et cetera, to make it applicable in like daily clinical practice. But I think we're actually getting pretty close.
All right. Thanks a lot. Hope you enjoy Nashville. All right, back again from World GU 25 in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm here with a colleague and a friend who works about 5 minutes down the road from me at Vanderbilt University as a GU medical oncologist, Dr. Alan Tan. How are you enjoying Nashville?
Oh, I love it. Moving from Chicago, I feel like, you know, there's so many things to do here in Nashville. Music City, how can you beat it?
Absolutely. Okay, now we're going to ask you one question. You're a ctDNA expert, right? And in urothelial carcinoma, we've heard a lot about whole exome, whole genome, ctDNA. Does it matter? What's the difference?
Yes. I mean, I've had a lot of experience with the commercial assays with whole exome. And I would say in bladder cancer, it performs quite well. But have you seen from the studies like IMvigor 010, you know, the sensitivity isn't as high as it could be. So how do you increase that sensitivity? Well, you could add more time points and follow longitudinally, but also technically we can actually increase the sensitivity by following more than just 16 specific mutations. We now have panels that are going to 64,000, 1,800, even 5,000. That's a lot of mutations to follow. But I think that along with machine learning and trying to decrease the background noise with specific technologies like, you know, phase variance, those are upcoming. This is really what's going to find that needle in a haystack in the future.
No, I think that's really helpful. And I think something that is already commercially available to many of us in community oncology, we can order these tests. We can pick between genome and exome. Genome, as you say, may be more sensitive. Exome is where most of the data was published in urothelial cancer, so we do have to keep that in mind as well. But I think overall, it's exciting as we get deeper and deeper. We're going to probably help our patients even more. So any final thoughts about World GU 25 or how hot you like the hot chicken?
I mean, I love hot fried chicken. I mean, you don't have this stuff in Chicago, but World GU is great because we had a chance to have these candid discussions with our colleagues. And it's not always the same players that we see at the big meetings. We get, like, junior colleagues that we don't see on the podium, and they have things to say, too, and it's really important to have that heterogeneity.
All right. Thanks, Alan.